stop me now. Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joe Flesh, and I am joined by friend Ryan G. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Very good. And you've joined us here for the first episode of our new podcast, The Hobby Heroes. This is my friend Ryan and I's kind of venture. You know, I ran the WoCast for many years, and it was a dedicated Warhammer Fantasy podcast for the most part. But Warhammer Fantasy is no longer a game. And we kind of accept that. So, you know, I guess part of my moving on experience is that I wanted to do something different. I don't want to take the WoCast on. It's really a Warhammer-centric thing. I don't want to turn it into something different. So, honestly, it probably is going to end up going the way of the dodo, for those of you that listen to that one. And this is kind of going to be the new jam for us. And Ryan has agreed to wonderfully co-host the show, which we super appreciate, because a show is nothing without a co-host.
Yeah, I'm super excited to try. You know, I've done a couple of the WoCasts with you, but be my first full-fledged co-hosting podcast, so I'm hoping things go well and we have some fun with it.
And that is the goal of the show, is to have fun. So I guess that's, you know, I think people have probably heard us on the WoCast, and maybe later in future episodes we can discuss kind of our hobby pedigrees for anyone that's new joining us. But let's kind of just say what the show is. I think our overall goal is to discuss the hobby that we're playing now. And primarily the two games that we are playing are Mantix, Kings of War, and Outlaw Miniatures, Wild West Exodus. So for those of you who are tuning in, Kings of War is essentially the mass fantasy battle combat game at this point. It is blocks of fantasy troops moving around, maneuvering, shooting their weapons, fighting close combats, and mighty monsters, creatures, and heroes clashing on a battlefield. Ryan, what is Wild West Exodus?
Wild West Exodus is a skirmish-based game that is based post-Civil War, but it has a bit of a sci-fi kick to it. So you have lasers and jet bikes and all kinds of, you know, kind of Shadowrun-ish tech upgrades to just kind of make things a little bit different. But the nice part about it is you have a lot of named different characters, you know, like Wyatt Earp, Billy the Kid, you know, different things like that, and it puts a different spin on history. So that's adds a whole nother dimension to it.
Yeah, one of the ways I've always kind of described Wild West Exodus, and this goes back to anybody who was gaming in the early 90s or, you know, heavy into RPGs, it's got a very Deadlands-ish feel.
That is very similar to Deadlands.
I loved Deadlands.
Yeah, it's a good game.
I think it was more magic than technology, but there was some tech in there too. So what we want to do is we want to be hobbyists. We don't want to be super competitive gamers. We don't want to be, you know, hard-nosed, play the hardest thing we possibly can. We want to have fun with our games, and we want to espouse that to everybody who chooses to listen to us. As such, a lot of our shows are going to have kind of a narrative bend on them. We're going to be discussing scenarios and things such as that, and narrative play in our games. Because Kings of War and Wild West Exodus, particularly Wild West, I think, really lend to a narrative style of play. And I think Kings of War currently is actually missing a little bit of narrative style, because it's such a new game. The background isn't super fleshed out yet. They don't have years of campaigns and named characters, whereas the previous game, you know, Warhammer did. So it'll be nice to kind of construct that ourselves as we go along.
Yeah, that's good and bad, because it doesn't have a lot to build on, but that's also good because then we have the freedom to build what we want and kind of make it our own at that point.
Right. And, you know, while it's not Warhammer, we do have 25, 30 years of Warhammer stuff to build on. We've got a lot of experience playing the game. We've got a lot of ideas and books just full of thoughts and things that we can, you know, kind of pillage and bend to our own will at this point, which will be nice. So, now, while we do plan on doing a more narrative bend, we do also plan on going to conventions and playing in tournaments, so you're certainly going to get some of that in the show as well. We aren't just going to, every show, talk about some new story that we're playing. We will occasionally come on and say, hey, we're going to the Clash of Kings at Adepticon, and, you know, so this show we're going to talk about kind of our ideas for lists and what we want to take and what we think of the restrictions that are in the comp packs, if there are. So, I mean, you can expect a little bit of tournament coverage as well. And certainly when I go to these tournaments, I will absolutely record there and get some of those recordings onto the show as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I mean, we do focus on everything, really. I mean, we will we paint our stuff, you know, we take what we want to take, but we also like to play stuff in a competitive environment so that we do know what's out there, and it gives us ideas of where to go. And I mean, I guess maybe it'll be different with this, but part of playing Warhammer so long was just trying things outside the box. Like, we knew what would work, and so we could just take that and do well at the tournament, but part of the fun was taking something that didn't work, that you know wasn't really going to work, and then trying to make it work. And so that's part of our, at least yours and my aspect here, is we want to encase it all, not just one aspect, but we want tournament gaming, we want fluff, we want painting, just all of that, just trying to throw it into this podcast and send it out to you guys.
Absolutely. So I guess real quick, I kind of forgot to mention this towards the beginning. If my voice is a little cracky, I apologize. I actually am sick. We tried to get the show recorded last week, but just couldn't work out a time to get together. So we had to wait a week, and then I went on a camping trip with my family for Scouts, and we all got sick. So it's a wonderful time.
So speaking on my end for that, they just started getting into the fields today. So if you hear me go silent for a while, I'm probably blowing my nose or something. Not to get too gross on you guys.
So Ryan's family farms, in case you folks don't get the getting into the fields part.
Oh yeah, sorry. So all the corn dust and everything's in, and it was been a nice day today, so we had the windows open, not even thinking about it. And so allergies are acting up, and I know, surprise surprise, a gamer with allergies, but I am one of those few, and so I do have to deal with that.
And you actually live on the family farm, too, so there's no avoiding that.
Yeah, I could throw a rock and hit the tractors.
So, our first episode, we are going to be discussing Kings of War. Now, we went for a narrative bend on this one, but we wanted to also keep it very, very simple for our first episode, just to give you guys kind of an idea of what we're going to be doing in the future. So what we did is we made our army lists completely blind, had no idea what the other person was going to take. We had no idea what scenario we were going to do, how we were going to, you know, change that to fit our game. But we figure, since, you know, it was kind of out of the blue that we decided to do this. I mean, I think honestly, you know, me and you talked about two or three times, and then just one day I sent you a message like, all right, everything's there, Twitter accounts, Facebook, website, it's ready.
Yeah, and I honestly like wasn't quite even sure what we were still going to do. I knew we were going to do something regarding a podcast when we played this game, but even then I still didn't have the full effect. So
yeah,
it was more just a game for me. I didn't really put a whole lot of narrative into this first one. It'll get better from here.
Yeah, I'm an impulsive person. It's just the way I am. So I was like, oh, I got excited about something. New game, new podcast. Let's do this. Ah!
Right. I think you talked about it on like a Wednesday, and everything was up by that Saturday. So yeah,
I'm pretty
you
fast.
You were on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, a number of years, and you learn how to get through all that setup stuff pretty quick.
Right.
So why don't we go over the list real quick, Ryan? What did you play?
All right, so my list, I took Ogres. Ogres is a rollover from Warhammer. It's an army that I had with that. My Kickstarter dwarves hadn't come in at that time. I do have them now, so that would be awesome. But so the list that
get
I took,
to work.
We took 2,000 points. I just had a warlord and a warlock as my characters. And then the Legion of Warriors, which is 12, two hordes of siege breakers, which are 6 apiece, just a regiment of chariots, which is 3, the mammoth, a giant, and then a horde of the boomer ogres. And so pretty standard ogre build, at least so far for me. I'm still in that kind of push it forward phase, still trying to get all the nuances with this game still. So it usually happens with me whenever I'm trying to learn a new game. I just kind of take the easy choices of, well, I'm just going to push this forward. Ogres, they're an easy army generally. And we'll see how it works, get the base rules, and then, you know, kind of modify things as we go.
So what about magic items?
Magic items. The warlord had the healing spell. The Legion of Warriors had the +1. Or no, I'm sorry. They had the vicious, the reroll ones to wound. And the chariots had the Brew of Haste for +1 movement.
All right. So going over to me, I had a horde of dwarven ironclads. A troop of 10 rangers with throwing mastiffs, a steel behemoth, a Jaren bombard, which is the war machine, king on a beast with the wings of honey maze so that I could proxy in my dwarf gyrocopter and make it feel right to me, you know, a regiment of earth elementals with the brew of haste, an army battle standard, an organ gun, a regiment of 20 Iron Guard, who are the elite dwarfs. They hit on threes. Nice 6+ defense, so really solid. Along with that, I took a Stone Priest with Bane Chant added on to him. I took a regiment of Berserkers with Brew of Strength, so that they could be really choppy when they got in there, because I thought, man, they have a boatload of attacks. We'll see what they can do. And then I took a troop of Sharpshooters to try those out. They had the keen eyes, so the extra +1 to hit, making sure that you know, I maximized their 5 shots every turn. I wanted to hit on threes instead of fours. And then another Stone Priest with Bane Chant. So I took a couple guys to give crushing strength bonuses throughout the army where I needed it in combats, a fair amount of shooting, and then a character who could fly to go and hunt war machines, which, you know, Ryan didn't take any war machines. So he was, I feel, pretty useless during the game. But, I mean, that kind of happens when you blind build. So there's not much to be done about that. So those were our lists. And what happened is we had to come up with a scenario to play. So we built blind. So we wanted to keep the scenario pretty loose. We didn't want to get kind of crazy story-driven specific on it, considering we had no idea what each other were taking. And what we ended up doing was digging, like I said, you know, we've got years and years of Warhammer stuff kind of in the closet. So I pulled out one of the random terrain tables from, I think it was 5th edition. It was a nice one. It might have been 6th, but it had, I think, 7 or 8 different charts for kind of the areas you were in, whether you were in the Arctic or the mountains or the plains or the forests. So I think I just picked, like, generic, like, plains. We ended up with a battlefield. We ended up with a battlefield that had a forest, a couple of hills, some ruins, a big tower, and then a small, like, farmstead. And I set the terrain up kind of randomly. You know, I basically rolled once for each of the 6 squares, squared off sections of the field, and then kind of rolled a scatter die and a d6 to see if they moved at all and where they kind of ended up. Now, originally, instead of a forest, I had rolled another, like, farmstead or something that was supposed to be 3 buildings. And I thought, I think we really need a woods, so we just kind of fudge that and throw woods on there. And then, after having decided that, you know, there's a farmstead and kind of this big fancy tower and some arcane ruins, we decided that, well, let's say it was a once upon a time kind of a wizard's area. and we ended up going with Scenario of Loot. And that's just straight out of the Kings of War 2nd Edition rulebook. You put three markers kind of on the center line of the table. Any unit can pick them up by ending their move on them. And one of the things I find most interesting is once you've picked it up, you can then leave the table and secure that loot. And the person with the most loot at the end of the game, in their control, either held on the table or off the table, wins. I think that's pretty cool because it gives you the ability to, if you don't think the fight is going to go your way, just kind of grab it and hightail it out. I think I probably had a better chance to do that initially, and then I kind of squandered it by not paying attention to what I was doing. But what do you do?
Yeah, I think we both kind of got lost in just the fighting there at the beginning. It wasn't until about turn 4 or 5 that we kind of both realized that, hey, it doesn't really matter what we kill. We need to get these tokens, and that's when you kind of saw our strategies change.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I think I may have actually had two of them. But that didn't last long. And then we decided that, you know, since we're fighting on a magical area, a place that the wizards used to be with their arcane ruins and their wizard's tower, I thought, well, wouldn't it be neat if the loot actually did something? It was magical loot. So we took the 40 items out of the main rule book and we kind of distilled them down. You know, we went through and got rid of the things that were insanely good, like +1 to hit and +1 to hit when shooting. We got rid of all the simple like 5-point items like reroll a single failed to wound. We got rid of, I think, the ranged attack ones. We got rid of the flight ones. We got rid of the ones for the most part that changed stats a lot. And we broke it down to 10 of them. And then we decided that whenever you picked up a chip, you would basically roll a d10 and that would be the magical artifact you found. So I thought, you know, had we concentrated on that a little earlier in the game than we did, I think that could have been a kind of a cool concept. Like, oh, I saw you pick this up. I really want that. So now I'm going to concentrate more of my army into this unit so that I can get that and then use it against you. But like Ryan said, we kind of didn't pick up on that until too late in the game, at which point it didn't really matter.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just good to... It just adds more flavor to it. I mean, it's just... Instead of just getting these off there, or grabbing them and getting them off there, if it, I mean, like you said, none of the magic items were game-breaking, but none of them really are in Kings of War. But it's just something that's saying, well, now I got an extra crushing strength, I can go forward and actually deal with that unit. It definitely could be a game-changer, but not big time.
Right, right. So that was it. Roll for the table sides. And also, if anybody is interested, I've got pictures of the game. I don't remember how many. I think maybe 6 or 7 pictures. I tried to take one at the bottom of each turn and just kind of see how the table was. Those will be posted on the blog, thehobbyheroes.com. And so if you're interested in those, you can float over there and check out the pictures of the game as well. So let's start. Ryan took, I guess if you're looking at the pictures, he's going to be on the north side of the table.
Man, if you notice that Joe is still kind of in that Warhammer mind frame, there is no terrain in the center of the board. I just realized that looking at these pictures. It is very neatly 3 on one side and 3 on the other.
Yeah, well, like I said, I rolled basically in each of the 6 2x2 sections. Old habits die hard. Maybe, you know, as we go, we'll get there. I don't really know. You know, that's kind of been the standard Warhammer setup for so long. We're just dipping our toes into the Kings of War, so I really don't know if there is a standard setup for this game.
Yeah, I think this is what, like, my 4th game, your 3rd, something like that. I mean,
yeah.
We're still relatively new into it.
Yeah, but we're excited about it, and that's what counts, damn it.
Absolutely. So, all right, so starting from left to right on the picture, I got my Horde of Boomers, the Legion of the Warriors, my Mammoth, which is the old Stonehorn from GW, so it's on a bigger base. I kind of marked it the 50 by 100 for game purposes, but I'm just rolling for it with it for now to just kind of see how it plays. And then up front there, I got my Warlock. Right behind him is the Warlord. Next to them is the 2 units of Horde Siegebreakers. We got the Giant, and then finally on the far right flank there, I got my unit of Chariots, which are represented by my Mournfang.
Yeah, so going down to me on my left, I got the five sharpshooters, along with the troop of rangers. There's a stone priest, kind of hiding in those ruins, next to the berserkers, the bombard, the iron guard, the BSB coyly hiding behind the tower, an organ gun, the 40 or the horde of ironclads, the steel behemoth represented in this game by two gyrocopters on a chariot base, the king on the great beast with the wings of honey maze as the single gyrocopter, and my horde of earth elementals represented by three giants. Because they're on 75 mil bases, they were closer to a horde than they were a regiment. And I don't know how big the earth elemental models are or should be, but I thought, well, three giants feels just as good as that, so why not?
Right, and with King's Ward, really the footprint is what you're looking at. I mean, you want the models to be close, you want people to understand what they are, but, I mean, that's a big good aspect of Kings of War, is it is the footprint, so you can do a whole lot of conversions and not be real worried about it.
Yeah, and it gives me an excuse to use some of the five or six giants I own.
Yeah, too many giants that you own.
Shh, never too many. I think there's only one GW giant I don't own right now, and it's the like one of the original Marauder or Citadel ones from like the early 80s.
I'm sure that one looks good.
No, it's terrible. But it was lead, and it weighed 100 pounds, and it came with like five different head options.
There you go.
So it was a pretty big deal when they made it way back in the day.
Oh, I bet. Top of the line.
So kind of, you know, tactically, we're set up here, and what I did is I put the sharpshooters way out there on the left, because I'm like, yeah, 36-inch range, I'm going to hit on threes. Like, I'll put them over, you know, far away so that nothing runs over and kills them immediately. And then I put the Vanguard and troops, the Rangers, there so that they could kind of move out early. I thought originally, like, I'm going to move out real early and take that loot marker right in front of them. And they did eventually, they did get it, I think, on like turn three. I don't know. And my king over on the right, I wasn't real sure what I was doing with him, to be honest. Like, I put him in the list to go get war machines, which, like I said, Ryan didn't have any. I didn't know what to do with him, so I just kind of threw him on the right and figured he'll find his way where he wants to go. All right, so first turn, basically I moved a lot of things forward. The Rangers vanguarded out of the ruins. The Berserkers moved up with the Iron Guard kind of there to support. I thought the Iron Guard were going to get a mammoth charge, so I thought I'd leave them back a little farther. And then I put the Steel Behemoth forward, the Earth Elementals a little forward, and then flew the king over to the far right, kind of hoping to let Ryan come out of his deployment zone first so that he could try and get behind some things and threaten. Didn't work so well for me, did it, Ryan?
I think it worked out better than what you make out, because, I mean, he did survive the whole game, and well, until you basically threw him away at the end, but...
Yeah, spoiler well, alert. He survived... This first turn, he survived by luck.
Yeah, because... I mean, on my turn, I mean, you basically just moved forward position, and then I guess you got your shooting that did quite a bit for generally mantic shooting.
Yeah, put a wound on a giant. Well, I did some damage to a giant. I did some damage to the Legion. And I think I did some damage to the boomers as well.
Yeah, you put, I mean, your stone thrower or whatever it's called is hit on the Legion, yeah.
Yeah, usually shooting doesn't show to be nearly as powerful, but this game, my dice were just on it.
Yeah, and so then on my turn, you know, I had the Brew of Haste on the chariot, so he kind of psyched him out, and he got an inch closer than he should have, so I was able to charge him, but ended up bouncing on that. So then I knew those guys were dead, because I left him out there to hang with those earth elementals right there also, which is something that I got to work on. I got all this speed with my chariots and, you know, the mammoth and the giant, and I just throw them out there and they die is going to be the running theme. So it's part of the learning process, but other than that, I just kind of pushed everything forward, trying to keep my measurements, you know, outside of the charge range of his things, which wasn't too hard being that he's dwarves, but you kind of see like an arrow formation on this picture as I'm just kind of pushing everything forward as best as I think I can.
Yep. So the king got charged, like Ryan said, but by I think he did like 6 or 7 damage to him. There's only one die there next to him, so I'm going to guess 6. And he shockingly didn't break. So he stood there, which was great for me because it left you just waiting for the earth elementals. So turn 2, you know, I backed the berserkers up away from your legion, put the behemoth forward a little, pushed the earth elementals over into your chariots who, you know, popped those, and then put some more shooting into the legion of dudes and the boomers. And then your turn, you came rumbling in a place I didn't expect, I add.
Yeah, the mammoth went right into the, what do you call that?
Organ gun. It's still an organ gun.
It's still an organ gun. That's my problem. I keep wanting to say all the old terms and not the new ones. I got to learn all these new terms, but hey, that makes it easy. So the mammoth went into the organ gun. My goal was to hit that. I knew I would break it with the triple attacks, and just hopefully my D6 would take me past his warriors. That didn't happen, so disaster.
Yay.
Next turn for the mammoth. But then I also took the giant into the steel behemoth. Did all right. I didn't expect to break it, but I put some wounds on it, bounced off. Moved the boomers up. I kind of pushed those too far. I went into charge range of him when I should have stayed back within my shooting range, but still outside of charge on him, and I paid for that. And then everything else just kind of moved up, used the warlord with his magic item to heal up the legion, and just kind of prepared for combats at that point. And everything bounced except for the organ gun. I destroyed it, and I think I only rolled it 2 or 3. I needed more, about 4 or 5, to get out of his charge arc. And then that leads us to the next turn.
Yeah, so 3. Like you said, I had put some damage on those boomers the turn previous. And sure enough, you'd moved out a little too close and put the rangers into them. They actually have crushing strength 1. I assume they have two-handed axes. So they ran in there and killed you. Like you said, the mammoth didn't get far enough away, so the horde of ironclads hit you in the flank, broke him down, although that was damn close. If I remember, I only broke you by like 1.
Yeah.
Push the behemoth into the giant. We fought, and I think that was kind of a recurring theme for like 2 or 3 rounds of combat. It was just pushing back and forth. I put the earth elementals into the Siegebreaker unit, and I ran my Stone Priest out there to try and Bane Chant them, thinking, well, if I can get them to Crushing Strength 2, you know, I don't have a boatload of attacks, but I really need to kind of get through that big shield on the front. A 6-plus defense is hard to break. I really needed the Bane Chant. Didn't get it off. you can see my king in the pictures, if you're looking along with us, is retreating at this point. And then my Iron Guard with the high defense, you know, I realized that I'm not going to get my berserkers to a point where they can charge that legion without him coming towards me. He's not going to walk into that, so I finally just shoved a unit up there as kind of a sacrifice. I thought, maybe I'll get lucky. Maybe they won't break. which, you know, like I said, it was a maybe. Turned out, not so much. But the Earth Elementals on their way in, and kind of here's, you know, one of those things that we're not 100% sure on. It says when you end your move on a loot token, you get to pick it up. And I charged, so I ended on a loot token. So I didn't, you know, back in GW days in Warhammer, there were always a lot of stipulations to things like that. Like, oh, well, you can't do this if you're in combat, or you can't do that if you're charging, or blah, 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 blah. So we didn't know how to play it, so we just said, sure, what the hell.
That's the good thing about Mantic, is it's still a sophisticated game, but it is a simple game as well. So when they say, you know, if you finish your movement on this, you can pick it up, that they generally mean no matter what happens, if you finish your movement on this, you can do that. I mean, they are pretty good, clear-cut, concise rules. There's, I mean, every time that we've looked something up, we have found the answer in the book. It's just an amazing rule set as far as keeping everything concise and just easy to find.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say simple so much as just clean.
Yeah, fair enough. Whatever word you want to use, I'm good with that.
So anyway, what they picked up was the Brew of Courage, which gave him a -1 when rolling against my unit's nerve.
Yeah, so then on my turn, the giant and the siege, wow, what the hell is that thing called?
Behemoth.
The behemoth the Giant and the Behemoth just keep going back and forth. They're just slapping each other around. Siegebreaker's countercharging the Earth Elementals. The Legion goes into his Iron Guard and ended up popping them. So that was pretty good. So I was able to prepare for his Berserkers to come in. My Warlord was able to get into his Rangers, or Crossbowmen, whatever they're called at this point, and was able to actually pop them. And so that helped out quite a bit by kind of emptying out that side. He still had his Sharpshooters over there, which will play a part later. And then my second unit of Siegebreakers did go into his Horde of Warriors. And again, everything else besides the Legion just kind of bounced off. And then the Tyrant killed off the Shooters. But again, we were just kind of fighting back and forth. And around this point is when I realized, hey, I need to go get these tokens because you already had one. There's two left out there. And I'm surrounding them at this point. You're kind of still back on your line. I'm pushing forward. So I'm, and one of the stipulations for picking up the tokens is individuals couldn't pick them up. Well, my characters aren't individuals. So the Warlord and the Warlock can pick them up. So that's at, you know, at that point, on my next movement phase, that's where I concentrated on and started trying to go for the win at that point.
Yeah, so next up, you know, I threw the Berserkers at the Legion, which I was really hoping to do good on. Again, put a Stone Priest over to throw Bane Chant on them and didn't get it, if I remember.
Right, so, if your shooting was on, your magic was the opposite. It was terrible.
Yeah, and I really kind of built with the concept of Bane Chant giving me the buffs I needed to break through stuff. And, you know, I mean, you don't think plus one is that big of a deal until, you know, you got to think, if I'm fighting guys that are defense five or six, you know, let's just say you're, let's say, like at the Siegebreakers, I'm fighting them at D6, I'm crushing strength one, I need fives, I'm only going to wound you a third of my dice. But if I could bring you down to that four, it suddenly becomes half. Like, that's a fairly significant difference. Didn't work out for me. So I put the Berserkers in, did a bunch of damage, didn't hurt you. I put the Warriors in, did some damage. Put the Elementals in again, did some damage. And at this point, I started concentrating fire from the Bombard and the Sharpshooters onto your Warlord. Because I'm like, well, you're going to have an item.
Then after that, it was just kind of... Really, I was kind of cleaning up. Like, the left flank had been pretty much gone at this point. I'd won that side. So the Warlord picked up one token. The Warlock picked up another. The Siegebreakers went into your Horde of Warriors again. But and they had, I mean, look, I bet at least 12, 15 die wounds or damage, whatever you want to call it. And I rolled snakes to break them. So they stuck around again. Your Steel Behemoth finally took down the Giant. My other Siegebreakers took out the Earth Elementals, so they were able to pick up the token that was on the Earth Elementals. And so currently I'm sitting with 3 out of 3 tokens, you know, sitting pretty, waiting for you to make your next move.
So your Warlock ended up with the Dwarven Ale, giving him the rule of Headstrong. And the Warlord ended up with the Brew of Strength, gaining Crushing Strength, which didn't he already have, like, Crushing Strength too?
3 because he had the two-handed weapon, I believe.
Yeah, it's like he sewed an item that had absolutely zero use to
him. Right.
But yeah, at this point, you can kind of see where this game is heading. The Legion went and killed the regiment of Berserkers, which I figured if I didn't break him when I hit him, they were gone. I mean, defense 3 against guys with Crushing Strength, even 1, you're wounding me on 2. So I kind of knew they were gone at that point. From there... Again, you had an item. I concentrated fire onto your Warlord, landed a stone on his head, and managed to kill him. My king at this point, like you said, I just kind of threw him away. I was like, I needed... I threw him away, yes, but I kind of threw him away on purpose. I wanted to make sure that the Bombard had another round of shooting at your Warlock. And if I had not put the king there, you would have been able to charge him with the Legion on your next turn. So I sacrificed the king for the round of shooting, hoping to kill the Warlock. Put the Horde of Ironclads into your Siegebreakers. Again, did not break them. Basically just sat the Behemoth there because he was going to die at some point. So I just Yeah, he didn't get a, he was too far away to get a charge off on the siege breakers, I believe, so I didn't charge in. He just kind of sat there.
And then at that point, my warlock just started running away. At this point, I didn't give him any magic items or spells, so he wasn't doing that great anyway, so he just decided to run towards my board edge with the token.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last picture we took, so.
Yeah, and then it was pretty much clean up at that point. The Legion killed off his hero on the gyrocopter. The Siegebreakers took out the Horde, and then the other Siegebreakers took out the Steel Behemoth. And so at that point, he basically just had two units left with a couple of characters, and that was pretty much game at that point.
Yep. I tried to take the last turn shooting at the Warlock to kill him. Couldn't break him, so I was hoping to at least get him down to one loot token.
Right, yeah. That 5+ to hit is tough.
It's rough some days.
Yeah. But I bet you hit 3 out of 6 turns that game. You were doing pretty well with it.
Yeah, I can't complain, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, that was the game. Ryan won the Magical Artifact duel. again, you know, like we said, it was a super simple kind of game. We didn't want to make it overly complicated, plus going into it blind. I guess something we should say, you know, we talked about the fact that your chariots caught my king out blind, is we play with closed lists. Now, from what I've gathered from the internet and talking to other people, especially the guys in England, I guess they play open-listed, and I can see the... I can see the ups and downs of open and closed list. I think that the game holds a lot more mystique to it being closed list. I think the game already kind of has the Mexican standoff issue. And I think if you do closed list, that kind of goes away a little bit because you're like, well, you know what? I don't know what has what. So I don't know what's going to have the extra inch of charge. Other than I think that's probably kind of like a 1+ item. I'm pretty sure everyone's going to have that somewhere. So you're just like, well, you know, I do it and I do it and we'll see where it goes, which I enjoy. Like, I kind of enjoy that random, like, let's find out what's where as we get to it.
Right. I completely agree with you. I'm a big fan of the closed lists, just because you kind of know as you play, you're going to know kind of what's in every list. Like the Brujas is generally going to be somewhere. But, I mean, just not knowing where. I mean, is it one of their slow units that they're trying to speed up? Is it one of their fast units to get out there and get quick? So, I mean, that's part of it is planning for all contingencies. Whereas if you know where everything is, it kind of takes some of the, like you said, mystique out of it. But you're not able to get that surprise that, you know, is part of war.
Right. So, you know, that was the game. Didn't turn out too great for the dwarves. I'm still kind of having trouble coming to terms with how to operate that army. I couldn't operate them super well in early 8th edition Warhammer either. It's always just kind of hard to play with the slow-moving reactionary army. And I'm sure that there are actionary models in that list. Obviously, the Earth Elementals with Surge. Which I never was we never did end up using Surge in this game. That's why I had the priest over there by him during it, though, was just in case I could. The king who had the flying thing, you know, if I had successfully, if Ryan's chariots hadn't had the Brew of Haste and he had gotten into his backfield, he's no longer an individual once he's on that monstrous beast, which means that if he hits you in the back, he gets to treble his attacks. And I mean, he's not a super combat monster. But on the large beast, he gets 7 attacks with Crushing Strength 1 and Thunderous Charge 2. So +3 to wound if he hits you in the rear, 21 attacks. I mean, he could do some damage if he got into the backfield. He just didn't, and then I didn't want to let him die to a lightning bolt, so I ran away.
Right, and that's, I mean, yeah, I mean, small units he can take out on his own, but even more so with just a counter or a combined charge from the front and the rear, or even the flank. I mean, you're throwing out an additional 14 to 21 attacks. That could definitely swing a difference between being wavered, routed, or nothing.
Yeah, I feel like he's got a place in this army for sure. It's just a matter of me figuring out exactly how to use him. I really like the Steel Behemoth. It wasn't a murder machine. Like, it didn't go in and blow through things, but it sure as hell pinned you in place for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's But I think when you hear the name Steel Behemoth, that's kind of what you think. It's just, you know, a big anvil, you know. It's not going to go anywhere. And you just beat on it and beat on it. And eventually it went down, but it took, you know, a giant and then a whole unit of siege breakers to do it.
Agreed. I was pretty impressed with the dwarf sharpshooters, but I think that I would have been less impressed had I not given them +1 to hit. The hitting on threes meant that, you know, at least three of their five shots were hitting every turn, whereas if I'd left them on fours, it would have been pretty questionable as to whether that was two or three shots hitting a turn. I don't know where the future of that particular unit lies. I mean, giving them that +1 to hit is awfully expensive.
Yeah, I'm not real sure either, because it is just five shots, and so that's the thing, is you're nickel and dime and stuff, which is good, you know, late game, but there at the beginning, I mean, I guess maybe you put a couple wounds on some characters or something to...
Right, and I think that's kind of where they exist. They do, they're there to nickel and dime, and I think you're right, they're a late game play, but, you know, had the game gone well differently, what if both your characters had stayed on your left flank, you know, far away from them, they wouldn't have been able to, they're not gonna pick off a legion of ogres, you know.
Right.
You happen to have the warlord there towards the end, and I was like, well, that's the target, get him.
Right. It's for that, like when I rolled snake eyes on your horde of warriors, if I had something like that could have just went in there and the next turn threw in one shot to make them go, that's where the money's at.
Yep. I think, you know, we've had a number of discussions pretty much after every game we've played about kind of ideas. And I think that's part of what excites me about doing the podcast that we're, you know, choosing to do now, especially with discussion on Kings of War, is you're going to learn with us, which means, you know, for those of you who have been playing Kings of War since its inception and its first edition, you know, you might join the podcast at this point and go, these guys are talking about just ignorant moves, and what are they doing? They don't know what the hell they're doing. Well, no, we don't, but we're excited about it, and that counts.
And that's what's fun. I mean, it's fresh. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at it with new eyes, and you're trying to learn as you go. That's just most of the fun. I mean, it's just a new game, and it didn't take long. I mean, you and I are both pretty comfortable with the rules now after just three or four games. And
right.
So now it's all the little nuances and the movement and the shooting, and that's what's fun, just figuring all that out.
Yeah, and now it's to lock down tactics and, you know, kind of what units have a place and what maybe don't.
Yeah.
Especially, like, in our collections. Like, look, I love Mantic at this point. They've always seemed like a pretty cool company. They're out there to make models to sell to people at an affordable price. They happen to build a game to go along with those models. The first edition had its problems from what I've heard. I didn't play it. Second edition seems pretty solid. It seems to have fixed the problems that I did hear about. But currently we are playing with proxied armies. You know, we're using our old GW stuff. And so we're kind of relegated by what we have. And I'm probably not going to buy more stuff to fill out my GW armies for Mantic's game. Ryan kickstarted the second edition. He's got a dwarf army he's going to start putting together. Our buddy Dave kickstarted it. He's got, I think, undead.
Yeah, he's got a boatload of undead.
Yeah, I don't know. He bought a lot of stuff.
Right. He might as well have kickstarted it twice. He got a ton of stuff. But yeah, Go ahead.
I did not kickstart it. I believe we were in the middle of buying the new house when the Kickstarter was rolling. So I didn't have the money to throw at that. But I do fully intend to invest in a Mantic army in the near future. I've basically got it boiled down to two or three, you know, armies that I would like to pick from, because I feel if you are going to support a game, you have to support the company, whether you like their models or not. And I get that some people think that some of Mantic's lines are not good, as completely an aesthetic option and choice for everyone. I happen to like probably half their models. Some of the armies I don't care for. Not going to be the ones I play, because if you don't like the look of them, you're probably not going to enjoy putting them together and painting them. But that's a choice everyone has to make.
Right. And there are definitely better models out there, but these by no means are terrible. I mean, don't get me wrong, every line does have terrible models, but they're still good models, and the good-looking models, they just may not be the best. I mean, some of them are. Some of them are better than other lines that I've seen out there, but you know, you take what you're given, and you support a game that's really at this point supporting the community. I mean, you can't say that for all the different game systems out there.
Not at all.
And so, yeah, I kickstarted for Dwarves because I like the look of them. They're definitely different looking than the other Dwarves that are out there for like Games Workshop, for example. But I really like them. I like Mantic's line of them. I like their war machines. I like the fact that they get Badger Cavalry. I mean, how awesome is that? So I'm really looking forward to. I finally got those hobby juices going. You know, I want to do the multi-basing and just put some real effort into this Dwarf army to make it kind of top-notch, you know, try and step up my game a little bit.
Yeah, and we are absolutely excited to see it as you know, get it together and assembled and painted and grown. So let's move out of the game and, you know, we'll take a short break. So we're back. Hope you enjoyed the music. Speak of which, you can get ready to hear a lot of that.
That's how we roll. I mean, we are kids of the 80s, and that's our music.
We grew up on the 80s music, so you know, I know some. It seems like a lot of podcasts I listen to, you know, death metal, thrash metal, heavy metal, or whatever. I'm just like, no, we listen to the 80s. So yeah. Get ready for that nonsense.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it to a minimum, but it's definitely going to be there.
So, you know, let's take a minute just before we plan our next game, because that's kind of the breakdown of our show is what we want to do, and we didn't really discuss it at the beginning of this show. We're going to kind of discuss, you know, what we've been up to, because it is easier if we set a kind of trend for how we want to do things. We're going to discuss what we've been up to, then we're going to kind of discuss the game that we talked about playing in the previous episode. So in this first episode, you know, we played the game pre to the show, so we had to explain it to you. But what we're going to do now is basically come up with the narrative for the next game we want to play. Now, obviously, like I said, if we end up going to Adepticon or a tournament, then we're going to probably talk about list prep for that and maybe a practice game of that. But for the moment, narrative. So let's just kind of, you know, this is kind of supposed to be freeform. All right. So
I'm thinking we started off with Kings of War. Why don't we go Wild West Exodus next game? Let's get a game of that in, maybe.
All right, so you want to throw Wild West Exodus under it?
Yeah. I mean, let's do some maybe Pat Garrett versus Billy the Kid. You know, let's see if I can truly smoke him this time.
All right, so we want Pat Garrett.
Well, I'm just throwing things out there. I mean,
Billy the Kid.
We can also do Wyatt Earp, Jesse James, whatever you want to do. I mean, I got all their brothers out there now. Which one do you want?
Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, is they're not the most well-known ones. Like, Jesse James and Wyatt Earp are kind of the spokesmodels for that game system. So, you know, I think, yeah, let's take a little bit of the lesser guys. Like, a lot of people come in and they're like, ah, Wyatt and Jesse, that's where it's at. Right. Let's do them.
Well, and then, I mean, the background of actual history is Pat Garrett did supposedly kill Billy the Kid. I mean, that's up for question, depending on who you talk to.
He let him go.
Well, depending on which, you know, Emilio Estevez movie you watch, it's depending. But I mean, it's so we're gonna. I say we take Pat. I take Pat Garrett. I'm gonna try and bring down Billy the Kid for good this time.
All right, so Billy the Kid, he was kind of notorious in New Mexico, so we're going to be playing a desert table.
Or, you know,
desert-ish. What do you think about, you know, do we want to do a kind of a time frame on the game? Like, do we want to play maybe something interesting like where I'm sneaking into town to rob the town at night? Or do you want to do it during the day or do some kind of weather effect?
Yeah, I mean, we can do, let's try and do it, you know, do something different than just, you know, there's just a shootout. Let's try and add a little something to it, you know, do it at night or do it with a dust storm, whatever you want to do.
How about a nighttime objective base?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sneaking into town to maybe rob the payroll or something, and, you know, somehow you found out about it, so you're ready for me, but you're not 100% ready for me.
Sounds good. Typey.
Yeah. let's see. So, nighttime. I guess we're going to do the objective peril. It's going to be a village. So, we need town, we need buildings, crowded streets. Well, not crowded as in people, but you know.
Yeah, alleys and whatnot.
Alleys, lots of terrain. I can't wait till we eventually get a train for this damn game.
Yeah, you got the track. We just need the train.
Yeah, I need like two more sets of those things.
You need to murder your Christmas set and get that train out there.
I need like two more.
Well, Joe has this Christmas train set that he puts out every year. And so we keep trying to convince him to just steal that and paint it up and use it for Wild West Exodus. It's the right scale.
It is the right scale. Currently, we just have the tracks laid out on the table. So let's see. Buildings, lots of stuff. Definitely need cover. What kind of... Do you happen to know... you have any idea what Pat Garrett cost?
No, I can go find it real quick.
Rough guess? 150?
195, I think.
Okay, 195 works. I think Billy's like the same-ish area. So what kind of point size do we want to put on the game?
Anywhere from... say 500 to 750, whatever you want to do.
I say let's go with 500. I'm trying to sneak in. I don't want to
just do a small.
Bring like, yeah, you don't want to bring a huge posse with you.
Yeah, that's fair.
Saying that, $500. How about we cut 2 feet off the board, play on a 4x4?
Yeah.
You know, that way we can really pack the buildings in, make it tight, give a lot of alleyways. Maybe it'll encourage us to climb buildings and jump roof to roof. That'd be pretty cool.
I don't know, but that sounds like something Billy would do, not Pat.
Yeah, wild and crazy. So, let's see. What the average game lasts 6 turns, yes?
Yeah.
Do we want to allow other named dudes, or do we want Pat and Billy to be it and just, you know, schmucks to go with them?
Let's do some other named dudes. I mean, otherwise, I don't even know if I got enough schmucks to go to 500 at that point. I only got 10. They're only like 15, 20 points apiece.
Well, yeah, five of them's $100 usually.
Yeah.
So let's say Billy and Pat are 200, five dudes 100, that's three. Put a named character, they're usually about what, 1 to 150?
Yeah.
Maybe, probably, 1 to 150.
Probably usually less than, about 100 or less, depending on how named you get.
I think all mine are between 1 and 150.
Whether it's a sidekick or an underboss.
All right, so we'll not exclude other characters, that's fine.
I mean, and we can always change this. I mean, if we get together,
yeah, absolutely.
Decide, you know, it would be good just to have Pat and five guys versus Billy and six or seven guys. We can always do that as well.
Yeah, I just thought it would be entertaining for us to basically hammer it out here on the show. You know, people can kind of hear the creative thoughts that go into the idea. Because, like we've said, the game is narrative. It's supposed to be fun. We're supposed to enjoy it.
Right.
I know some people, you know, they enjoy a game, but they enjoy the tournament hard aspect of it. Well, we enjoy playing it for fun, and the tournament hard aspect, while we get it and we do enjoy it, it's not what is super fun for us.
Right. Tournaments are an aspect of it because, I mean, you just like to measure up, I guess, really. I mean, you know, I can go back and forth with you all day, but and then we go to a tournament and just get smoked. We realize that we're not that good.
You know, no, not
nice
at all.
Just, you know, have a measuring stick every now and then.
All right, so victory conditions. I'm trying to get the loot and get out. What about Pat Garrett? You wanting to kill me or you wanting to arrest me? Do you need to take me alive?
Well, he didn't the first time.
Well, so they say. All right, we'll let you kill me.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, kill Billy specifically, I guess.
No mercy. As people can see, Joe is generally the more creative one, and I'm just like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. There we go. Yeah, you'll
get tired of me running the creative end.
My progression through here as we evolve.
That should be entertaining.
Yeah.
Chuck did the same thing when we did Walkass. It was funny. It was interesting to watch him, you know, get to the same points and grow as we both grew as podcasters talking about our games. So. All right. Well, I think that's a good basis to work from. Since we didn't do it at the beginning of the show, anything you want to talk about hobby-wise?
Hobby-wise, I am working on Wild West Exodus. If you couldn't tell by our just recent discussion, I have the Lawmen. I have just based all of them. I bought some of the plastic bases from Outlaw Miniatures that looked like the wood planks, and so I'm doing that instead of just, you know, kind of your flock and grass. And so I got all those done, got all the guys glued back onto them. They are primered, but none of the guys have any actual paint on them yet, so that's the next step, is to get some paint on them so they don't, you know, look as bland. So hopefully when we do these battle reports with the pictures, there won't be a bunch of black out there, but there will be some.
Well, you know, can't always win.
Right.
Let's see, me, I have been doing very little, honestly. Basically, getting the show ready, getting the Twitter account established, getting all the people that I need to follow and be followed. What I have been doing is writing rules packs, actually. I mean, basically, you know, like I said, I'm enthusiastic, and I kind of walk blindly into things. And when we decided that Kings of War was the way we were going to go, as our friendly group is, I basically went out there, joined a couple of different Facebook groups, the Kings of War Chicago area, because, you know, mid-Illinois doesn't have one.
Right, it's me and you.
And then there's a Kings of War U.S. players, joined their forum, made the mistake of, you know, asking if anybody was going to be interested in a tournament at FlatCon, which is a local convention at the end of October in Bloomington, Illinois. And then the guys running DragonfallCon shot me an email and were like, hey, you want to run a Kings of War for us at Dragonfall at the beginning of October? And, you know, I had to think about it. I really did, because it's 3.5 hours north on a Sunday, you know. But Chicago has a group, so it's a good way to start making connections. So I said, yes, so I'm going to run Kings of War October 4th at DragonfallCon. You can look that up at dragon-fall.com. And then at the end of October, October 24th, I do believe. Yes, 24th. I will be running a Kings of War tournament at FlatCon, which you can find at flatcon.com. So they're just going to be single day, three round events, 2,000 points each. I've got rules packs written up in PDF format. They're linked on the forums. I think I even linked them in the Mantic forums themselves under the Kings or under their events section. If they're not, look up Facebook. I'm sure you can find them. You can look at Dragonfall or FlatCon's websites. They're there. I don't know that the rules pack link is in FlatCon's reg section, but you can get a hold of us if you're interested in that, and I will email it to you, and we'll post it on the blog when the show goes up so that you can get it from there.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll be at the FlatCon one, but I will not be able to make the Dragonfall.
Yeah, it was a bit short notice, yeah. So I didn't expect anybody that I knew from down here to even think about going up to that one. But I thought it'd be a good, like I said, chance for me to make connections up north. And, you know, the more people we connect with, the more likely we are to get a group going and solidify the social scene. Like, I mean, that's part of what Warhammer was for everybody that played it, was a social event. Mantic has been growing, but slowly, I think with 2nd edition and the death of Warhammer, the death of 8th edition Warhammer, you know, that community obviously has the chance to grow by leaps and bounds. So I think, you know, leaning towards it with us and really pushing it and going out there and supporting the game system as a whole will help that. And I think, you know, if that's what we want to see is Mantic and Kings of War succeed, then, you know, go do it. You can't say anything negative about a system and a public or an open scene not being there if you're not willing to support it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and I applaud you for jumping in there. I mean, I wish I could do more for you. Just time constraints for me, but anything you need help with preparation for, you know, I got your back.
Well, luckily Dragonfall is hosting the tables and all the terrain, so I don't have to make anything for that one.
That works out well.
Yeah, convenient for that. So that's it. This is a wrap of episode 1 of The Hobby Heroes. You can check us out, thehobbyheroes.com. We have a Facebook page, also The Hobby Heroes. Our Twitter account, if you want to follow us, is at Hobby Heroes Cast. You can email us, joe@thehobbyheroes.com or ryan@thehobbyheroes.com if you want to talk to either one of us. So we are totally out there. Go find us, follow us, like us. You know, you should be able to subscribe to us on iTunes. If you're listening to this, I'm assuming you were able to find that. I know it takes like 24 to 48 hours to pull the feed, and the feed hasn't shown up on iTunes yet because, you know, someone asks that they're like, hey, I don't see your feed on iTunes. Well, we didn't have a show at the time, and iTunes isn't going to pull that data until there's a show there. So, hey, should be there now. Check us out, The Hobby Heroes. And with that, we'll let you go. Have a good one.
Take care, guys.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men blunder. Can't you hear that thunder? You better run, you better take cover. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under. Leaders blow and mention the